Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back to Paris History avec a Hemingway. I'm back with Claudine, and today we're talking about gula. I don't think is that how you say it? Gula?
La gula.
La Gula. I mean, that is such an unfortunate name. Tell us more, Claudine.
Well, that's not her birth name, of course. And you'll know when you see an image of her and the famous painter that created it. La Gula, or Louis-Josephine Weber. I'm sure it's Weber or something different, but, you know, Weber. she was born July 12th, 1866 in Clichy, just right outside of Paris. Her father, Dagobert, was a carpenter, and her mother, Madeleine, was a laundress, a seamstress. She grew up in Clichy, just outside of Paris, and she had a brother and a sister. Her mother loved to dance and taught her at a very early age the love of dancing. So this should give you other clues of who she is. In 1882, at 16 years old, she moved to Montreuil and started working at the Moulin de la Galette as a dancer up in Montmartre.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. So in 1884, she moved just out right closer in to Clignancourt in the district of the 18th. And there she was working as a laundress at the Rue Neuve Notre Dame, and also dancing, of course, at the Moulin de la Galette and anywhere else she could. But instead of becoming a prostitute, this is a first.
Career change.
Yeah, she made extra money where she just started modeling for the artists. So at the time, she had met artist Ernest Samon and his brother. And then Renoir saw her, and Renoir asked for her to sit for him. And so once Renoir did that, then other artists started asking her to have her model for them. But she's not somebody that, you know, like, I couldn't even find a Renoir painting of her. So it's not like, you know, Manet and Victorine and Olympia. She wasn't really a huge well-known and still now, but one artist did that you do know. But she, at the Moulin de la Galette one day, she met the gentleman, Charles Détec. And he was a journalist and introduced her to Charles Zédier, who was a man who was going to later play a really important part in her life. And they met and they all went to dinner at the Grand Veil Four.
Fun.
In the Palais Royal. So she was encouraged to take more dancing lessons. And so she did that and became a much better dancer and started showing up at the different bal musettes at the Closerie des Lilas and the Elysee Montmartre and the Boulay Ball, which was right across from the Closerie Lila in the lower Montparnasse.
My goodness, I love she's all over Montmartre, my hood, and then she made her way over to Montparnasse.
Yeah, that whole area, Closerie des Lilas, was actually a dance hall way before it was the incredibly expensive restaurant that it is today.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they had, you know, it was kind of this little rival thing from, you know, the ones across that one from Closerie and then the Boulia ball that was across the street. And part of the Closerie des Lilas, part of it was actually created because he was trying to figure out a way for the patrons be able to get drinks to make more money off of them.
That is so funny.
Yeah. And that's otherwise, you know, most people know it as the place that Hemingway would sometimes sit to write when he lived right down the street.
It's all connected.
It's all connected, yeah. So in 1889, Charles Zidier and Joseph Oller opened the Moulin Rouge and asked La Goula, as she was starting to become known, to dance for them. She got that name, the name that's horrible as it sounds. She gets that because it basically means glutton. She gets that because she had this habit of walking through the crowd and just walk up to the different men sitting down, and whatever their drinks were, would just pick it up and guzzle it. Drink and guzzle it. So that's why she ended up getting that nickname.
That is great.
Yeah. And so she started the Moulin Rouge basically right when it opened. She met fellow dancer Jules Etienne, and he would go by the name of Valentin Montagne. And it basically, he was called Valentin the Boneless.
The Boneless.
Yeah, because he was really tall and he just could move. He had these crazy moves. And so he basically moved like he didn't have any bones.
That's so weird. I wish I could see that.
Yeah. So the two became a huge, like this perfect pair. They were always seen dancing together. And a gentleman that came in there who is known for his poster and his art, Toulouse-Lautrec. Painting them. The very first lithograph poster that he ever did shows La Goula and Valentin, and basically it just says La Goula Moulin Rouge, and you see her in the center of it, and in the back is just the silhouettes of people, and then it has Valentin in the front. And that was the very first poster he ever did. He did like 3,000 of them. They were plastered all over Montmartre and Paris, and sadly none of those actually survive.
I know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, I'm obsessed with the Museum of Montmartre. Yep. Like, they have all the remakes.
Yeah.
That's so wild. So now I know who's on the poster.
Yeah. So the original versions of those posters don't. I mean, I would just, could you just even imagine that here's this poster of Toulouse-Lautrec basically just plastered all over the city?
No.
And that poster basically made him famous too.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, like that's, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's such a cool photo.
Yeah, and we'll post a picture of him. But Valentin Jules Etienne, as he was known, was the son of a wine merchant, and he decided he didn't want to be in that job. So he started dancing at the Tivoli Vauxhall, and he actually trained as a ballet dancer.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's very fancy. From 1890 to 1895, he danced with La Goula, at which they were always dancing together at pretty much every single night. In his life, he danced more than 83,000 performances.
No way.
And he was never paid for any of them.
What?
Yeah, which was his choice. He never took money for anything.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's weird.
That is very strange. But, you know, Toulouse-Lautrec, of course, immortalized him in that in many different paintings. The one that you, the poster I was talking about, he definitely used like this Japanese technique where everybody is basically a silhouette in it, except for La Goula. Even Valentin in the very front is just a silhouette of him. She's the only one that's really, you know, so you actually see her face and everything about her.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And so, and then in the Orsay, there is a huge painting, but it's almost square. It's very large and has the both of them in that too. It's the dance at the Moulin Rouge painted in 1895. And it's there as well. And he actually painted her numerous times in paintings and in posters. And so basically the two of them made each other basically famous. Because of those posters.
I love how they just like work together on that one, but not really on purpose either.
Yeah, it's really cool. It was, you know, the very first one, she had this very, in that poster, he captures her during her famous move. You know, most, we know the can-can and the girls lifting the fronts of their skirts, but La Goula had a famous move and she basically lifted the back of her skirt showing off her derriere. That was covered. She had, you know, she was wearing or whatever the, you know, the undies of the day back then, which were a lot. So she actually would have this, and he actually captures that in some of the posters and the paintings.
That's so fun.
But it was he ended up with some of the pieces that, you know, he would just go there and sit there and, you know, hang out at the Moulin Rouge all the time and just start sketching all the different people there. So she was definitely one of his favorite. We've talked about other dancers at the Moulin Rouge. But she was kind of the first, because she was there right when it first opened. And she was kind of the star of the show from the very start.
I mean, what a time to be alive.
Yeah. But she decided later on she was going to hang up her dancing shoes and she wanted to quit dancing. So in 1895, she retired from dancing. And guess what her new job is going to be?
Prostitute.
Yes. A lion tamer.
Oh my God, what?
It's just a normal transition from dancing to lion taming.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so she had asked that same year for Toulouse-Lautrec to create some large panels to decorate her little her traveling show that she would go around with, and he created these huge panels, and she would go around to different zoos and different halls, city halls and stuff, and they would set up and bring their lions and their tigers. She ended up giving birth to a son in 1895 in that December. So when she hung up her shoes, it was about the same time she was probably pregnant. She ended up having a son named Simon Victor. And she never, ever would say who the father was, even, you know, in anything, that nobody knows who the father was. But she started this, you know, her lion taming business. She met and married another lion tamer named Joseph Nicholas Drexler. And so they were, you know, this couple that were lion taming.
Power couple.
Yeah. But in January of in 1904, she ended up getting attacked. They were both attacked by a lion, which is what happens. So she decided that they weren't going to do that anymore. And so she stopped that and decided to return to the stage, but this time as an actress.
Wow, she lived a colorful life.
Yeah, and there's a few more things that make it a little bit more colorful coming. But so shortly after that, she decided to leave her husband, who would end up going on to World War I and die. Mm. Her son ended up dying at just 27 years old in 1923.
From what?
Nothing's mentioned. I mean, because that's after World War I.
Yeah.
And then he died. The next job she had was at the Saint-Ouen flea market. She was set up a secondhand dealer. She was a secondhand dealer setting up a little shop. She lived across the way, basically, in like a tent.
What?
Yeah. her life is quite interesting. She spent her final years in Montmartre adopting sick circus animals and mutilated cats and dogs.
Oh, I mean, that's so sweet, because honestly, like, after working in the circus world and like torturing lions in some ways, yeah, like, she's doing the right thing.
I know, she would rescue them, and like these cats and dogs, you know, some of them would only have three legs or something like that. And she was known everywhere to be walking all over Montmartre with them on a leash.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet. Wait, but she ended up being like homeless cat lady?
Yeah, but now she's living in a house to take care of all, you know, she has a place to live that she's taking care of her lions, tigers, and bears.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, she at one point when it was, you know, women really couldn't go anyplace unchaperoned, she would walk around Montmartre with a billy goat on a leash. And so wherever she went, she always would say that she had a man with her.
Oh, I love that. I want a goat chaperone.
Isn't that? I mean, you could just picture a woman with a goat in Montmartre. It's not crazy.
I wish these crazy people, I mean, Montmartre is still full of crazy people, yeah, to be real. I mean, we know all the crazies. We're friends with them.
Yes.
There's a guy who walks his, he's got like one of those cats that looks like a tiger, and he walks it on a leash. And like, it's just casual, you know,
yeah,
walking a tiger cat around. And there's a guy dressed like a cowboy. They call him the sheriff of Montmartre. You know, it's still full of crazies, but not like that.
I know, not with a woman walking around a lion.
Yeah, that's way cooler.
That's so awesome. But she would, you know, everybody would see her. Everybody knew her, but she always wanted to kind of try to stay relevant in a way. So she would set up in front of the Moulin Rouge selling with a little table where she would sell cigarettes, peanuts, and matches.
I love it. Entrepreneur.
Yeah. And she was older, not that old. I mean, this is, you know, older for that period of time, we should say. Not older for now, but she was older and she had become quite overweight, and she was not the person that she was that everybody knew from the stage. Like, she just was kind of haggard and overweight. And, but she was like, oh no, I'm still going to be there. Like, you jerks are going to remember me.
Ula.
Yeah. And Maurice Chevalier actually convinced her to get back on the stage as a dancer, but she was not in any shape for it. And it was like, you know, the one thing I read said she was old, obese, and in failing health.
Oh, this is so sad.
I know, it's so sad. And took back to the stage. But on January 19th, 1929, she suffered a stroke. And she never recovered. 10 days later, on January 29th, she died.
Well, that's sad. She had this like wild and crazy life. And then she's like taking care of cats and obese on the street.
Yeah. But can't you just imagine her being, you know, the person that's walking her lion and like just screaming at random people? She probably was like, you know, maybe she was like talking to an imaginary friend. That's just kind of how I envision her end of her life.
I would be her friend. She sounds cool.
I know. It'd be cool. It'd be awesome. But she was buried in the Pantin Cemetery in Saint-Denis by Pierre Lazare, who was the artistic director of the Moulin Rouge. He paid and took care of it. Her great-grandson later, Michael Souvet, in 1992, with the help of Jacques Chirac, had her exhumed and moved to the cemetery in Montmartre. So we need to go find her.
Oh, wait, we can go find her. Yeah, she belongs in Walmart, obviously. Yeah. This is like her place.
Yeah, we'll definitely do a live video from there when I'm back in Paris shortly. But she died and she was moved to Montmartre Cemetery. But part of the best thing is coming up. So 2,000 people were in attendance as they did another funeral, you know, and then had her buried. And who was there? LaToya Jackson.
What?
It's so random.
Why is LaToya there?
I don't know. I mean, it's not even Janet. It's LaToya.
She must have been a fan. Yeah,
that's everything I read had specifically mentioned, like, that was the big deal that LaToya Jackson was there.
This is so weird.
I know. It's just one crazy thing after another. But it was just back in 1992.
Oh, that's not that long ago.
No, but I just think it's hilarious. It's LaToya Jackson.
I wish we could have been there.
I know, that would have been awesome.
Oh, LaToya.
Yeah. But she, poor Louise Weber, La Goula, she actually has a garden named after her up in the 18th at 14 Rue Burke. So we'll have to go visit her burial and her garden.
Seriously, I've just been walking in her footsteps and not even knowing it.
Yeah. You should, well, now you have an animal on a leash. You should just start, you know, you should dress him up as a little lion.
I'm going to bring it back, you know. I'll get obese and haggard. You know, I got the obesity part down with COVID.
Just dress and up I'll come by like you. You'll be like, I'm in front of the Moulin Rouge selling cigarettes.
Selling matches. I'm ready. I'm making a career change.
But she's awesome. She kind of, what I love is that she just kind of, she did whatever she wanted. She wanted to be a dancer. Fine. She wanted to be a lion tamer. Fine. Like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. That's going to make me, you know, happy, I guess. I hope she was happy.
I respect.
Respect. But I just love that she ended up becoming a lion tamer.
I just love her whole entire life.
I know. It's pretty awesome. And LaToya Jackson.
LaToya. Well, thank you so much, Claudine, for all that valuable information. And I can't wait for you to arrive in Paris. As you said, you're going to be here and we're going to do tours and videos and You can still join Claudine every Sunday right now for virtual live tours from Paris, where she gives you history and walks around with you live on camera as she tells you things. And you can sign up for that on her website or on the link in the show notes. So tune in next week, guys, and don't forget to join the virtual tours.
Thank you for listening to Paris History Avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's B-L-E-U, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.